Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're taking a deep dive into a concept often found in spiritual traditions, the aura. You know, the idea of an energetic field surrounding living beings, said to reflect their inner state.
Right. And for a long time, especially in the scientific West, this concept was largely considered, well, outside the realm of empirical study, maybe even purely symbolic or metaphorical.
Exactly. But the sources you've shared suggest something quite fascinating is happening. Recent advances in fields like neurobiology, fascia research, bioelectromagnetism, even studies of light emissions from cells. They're prompting a scientific second look at aspects maybe of this traditional aura concept. It seems science might be finding subtle, measurable phenomena that, well, that resonate with these older ideas.
That's it precisely. Our mission in this deep dive is to explore the aura from this really interesting intersection, drawing on both the cultural concepts and the current scientific research presented in this material. You know, what surprising connections and insights can we uncover when we bridge these perspectives?
So let's start with this idea of a scientific reevaluation. The traditional view paints the aura as, well, a mystical energy field.
Yes, typically understood as non-physical, perhaps metaphysical. But the shift highlighted in the sources is how research in specific scientific areas is beginning to point towards potential biological correlates or measurable fields that could relate to these concepts.
And the sources seem to zero in on a few key areas. Neurobiology, looking at the autonomic nervous system.
Fascia research, yeah, exploring the body's connective tissue.
Bioelectromagnetism, you know, the electrical and magnetic fields naturally produced by the body.
And even the study of these tiny light particles emitted by living cells, known as ultrafine photon emissions.
That's quite a range. Okay, let's maybe start with neurobiology and the ANS. What exactly is the autonomic nervous system?
So the ANS is the part of our nervous system that controls all the processes happening kind of behind the scenes, things like your breathing, your heart rate, digestion, blood pressure. It's constantly working to maintain internal balance.
Right.
And it operates through two main branches, the sympathetic system, which activates our fight or flight response.
Okay.
And the parasympathetic system, which promotes, you know, rest and recovery.
And we know stress really throws this system off balance.
Absolutely. Chronic stress and the sources even include environmental factors like electrosmog can significantly disrupt this delicate balance.
Mm-hmm.
When the ANS is stuck in sympathetic overdrive, it impacts physical health, emotional state, cognitive function, everything really.
Yeah, the sources bring in a perspective from a clinical approach called integrale orthopedy. How do they connect ANS imbalance to something they term an aura load?
Right, integrale orthopedy. It's presented as an approach that integrates various therapeutic methods. And in their clinical observations over many years, apparently, they report seeing a consistent connection between what they call an aura load, like a perceived burden or disharmony in the energetic field, and signs of ANS imbalance.
Yeah.
And they use pelvic torsion, which is a specific twisting pattern in the pelvis, as a key indicator. They find it reliably reflects ANS stress.
So pelvic torsion signals ANS stress in their clinical framework.
That's how they interpret it, yes,
yeah.
In their practice. Now, they have this test they call the integral stress test. Typically, if someone has pelvic torsion indicating ANS stress, touching key areas like the navel,
which they see as a central point.
Right. Or the neck near the vagus nerve, or even disturbing scars or fascial tension points. Normally that would cause the pelvic torsion to relax because these areas are directly connected to the nervous system and physical tension.
Makes sense, yeah. You're addressing physical or nervous system points directly.
But here's the central observation they report. If an aura load is present, this expected relaxation, well, it doesn't happen during the test. It's like the physical or nervous system input is somehow overridden or blocked by this perceived energetic burden.
That's a really striking claim. So the aura load is somehow primary in their model.
It appears to be, based on their clinical findings. And they state that their aura release technique provides a kind of counterproof for this.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, the technique, as it's described, involves holding an open hand, not actually on the body, but at a short distance away.
Yeah.
Specifically at the edge where you first sense or perceive a density or burden in the space around the person, the perceived boundary of this aura load.
Right.
And they report that just holding the hand there for maybe a minute or two does consistently relax the pelvic torsion, even when the direct physical touch didn't work.
That's quite a different approach to releasing physical tension.
It really is. And alongside the physical relaxation of the pelvic torsion, they observe other signs that the ANS is shifting back towards balance. Things like breathing deepening, often a sense of psychological and physical relaxation, and frequently suppressed emotions start to surface and release.
So based on these observations, what's the core interpretation from integral orthopedy? What are they saying is happening?
Their perspective, essentially, is that stress, unresolved trauma, suppressed emotions, these might be stored not just in the physical body, but also in this aura field. And that this stored burden can directly interfere with the healthy function of the autonomic nervous system, impacting both physical health and psychological well-being.
And this seems to resonate, perhaps, with the effects of other practices we know influence the ANS.
Yes, exactly. The sources draw parallels to practices like circular breathing techniques, you know, holotropic breathwork or pranayama from yoga. We know these techniques can profoundly alter states, reduce CO2 levels, and strongly stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system,
leading to relaxation, emotional release.
Precisely, which aligns really well with the traditional goals of aura cleansing. The sources note that their aura release and navel integration techniques seem to facilitate similar processes, leading to those same kinds of parasympathetic shifts.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit to fascia. This connective tissue network is getting a lot of attention lately, hasn't it? Both in therapeutic circles and scientific ones. How does it potentially link to this aura concept?
Fascia is, well, it's remarkable. It's this continuous 3D web of collagen-based connective tissue running throughout the entire body. It wraps everything, muscles, organs, nerves, bones. Mm. But it's far more than just packing material. It's densely populated with millions of sensory receptors, making it one of our richest systems for information. It's constantly sensing our internal state, our external environment, and transmitting that information to the brain.
So it's like a communication network as much as a structural one.
Exactly. And recent research is really highlighting its links to more than just physical movement. Fascia is increasingly understood to play a role in our emotional state and even possibly immune system function.
And the sources suggest this might be where we find a bridge to older concepts like pi or prana.
Yes. They propose that the highly sensory, elastic, and interconnected nature of the fascial network, well, it could potentially serve as a physical pathway or correlate for these traditional energetic concepts, suggesting that the body's energy flow might, at least in part, manifest through or be mediated by the fascia.
Okay. What have the integral orthopedy observations shown regarding fascia and energy specifically?
Well, they've observed in their clinical work that treating what they call energetic interference fields, and this could be through techniques like laser therapy or the aura release technique we discussed, or even just focusing mental attention on inner scars or specific gentle touch. Doing these things can instantly resolve that pelvic torsion.
Wow, instantly.
That's what they report. The marker for ANS stress just disappears.
So addressing these perceived energetic blockages or disharmonies, even those apparently outside the body in the aura, can have an immediate physical effect on a system linked to stress.
That's their reported finding, yes. And here's a point that really stands out from the sources. They describe how longer conscious touch on disturbed fascial areas frequently triggers the release of stored emotions. Things like deep grief, fear, anger emotions the body seemed to be holding on to.
Huh.
This points, they suggest, to a powerful connection between the skin, the fascial network, where we seem to store emotions, and this external energetic field, the aura they describe.
Wow. So the body holds onto emotions in the fascia, and interacting with this external field seems connected to their release. That's quite something.
That's the strong implication from their observations, yeah. They also note a specific correlation. The size of this perceived interference field in the aura seems directly linked to the burden it places on the person's body and psyche. They've observed fields ranging from just a few centimeters to, in some instances in their seminars, 30 meters or even more.
30 meters, that's an expansive concept of a personal field.
It really is.
Yeah.
And they report that releasing an aura field, regardless of its initial size, reliably dissolves the pelvic torsion and seems to clear other physical interference fields they identify in the body, which suggests that addressing the aura burden enhances the body's innate capacity for self-regulation and healing.
There's also a fascinating detail mentioned about sensing others during this process.
Yes. They note that the physical-like, vegetative, and emotional reactions that occur during an aura release are often sensed or even mirrored by others present in the room.
Really?
Yeah. They interpret this as a hint at the interconnectedness of our energetic fields, our auras.
Like feeling someone else's tension suddenly release or their sadness.
Exactly. It offers a potential explanation for why we instinctively feel drained or stressed or conversely energized and uplifted just by being near certain people. Our auras, carrying these patterns of stored emotions and stress, seem to influence each other. The sources highlight this exchange, particularly noting that therapists can unconsciously absorb stress patterns from clients, which underscores why they suggest daily aura release practices might be crucial for maintaining well-being, especially if you're in a helping profession.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's move on to bioelectromagnetism and subtle light emission. We know our bodies produce measurable fields, right?
They absolutely do. The electrical activity of the heart creates the measurable field used in an ECG, an electrocardiogram. Mm. Brain activity creates the fields for an EEG, electroencephalogram. Cell communication itself involves electromagnetic signaling. These are well-established biological fields, and they provide a definite starting point for scientifically exploring the idea of an energetic field around the body.
And they mentioned some experiments involving Qigong masters.
Yes. The sources reference studies where highly experienced Qigong practitioners have apparently been shown to be able to produce unusually strong, measurable magnetic fields. This finding, while obviously needing more research, lends some intriguing support to the idea that bioenergy, or perhaps these subtle biological fields, might be consciously influenceable.
Interesting. What about this idea of ultrafine photon emission, UPE?
This is a really compelling area of research mentioned. Studies have shown that living cells consistently emit tiny light particles, photons, in the visible light spectrum. This is sometimes discussed in relation to things like aura photography techniques.
Right.
Though the scientific phenomenon itself, the UPE, is distinct from the subjective interpretations often given to aura photos.
And this light emission changes based on the cell's state.
According to the sources, yes. These ultrafine photon emissions change in intensity and pattern depending on the cell's state. Notably, they tend to increase with illness or stress. This emission appears linked to metabolic processes, specifically oxidative metabolism and the production of reactive oxygen species, or ROS.
So is this just a biological byproduct, like exhaust fumes, or could it be something more significant?
That's really the key question the sources pose. While the precise molecular mechanisms are still being figured out, there's a growing hypothesis that this light emission isn't just biological waste. It could potentially play a role in cell-to-cell communication or overall health regulation. It sort of suggests living systems might literally be communicating via light.
So from measurable electrical fields to actually emitting light, science is uncovering subtle biological phenomena that could, in different ways, relate to the concept of an energetic field emanating from the body.
Exactly. These aren't claims of seeing colored halos around people, but rather exploring detectable fields and emissions that point towards perhaps a more complex, interconnected biological reality than we usually consider.
Okay, now let's look at how these ideas might echo in cultural concepts and therapeutic practice. Because energy fields have been discussed in wisdom traditions for millennia, right?
Absolutely. They have offering these frameworks for understanding health and consciousness that, you know, predate modern science by a long shot. Yeah. Think of traditional Chinese medicine, TCM, with its concepts of qi flowing through meridians.
Mm-hmm.
Illness is seen as a blockage in this flow. And it's fascinating that modern fascia research, mapping what are called myofascial meridians, shows these anatomical pathways that bear a striking resemblance to the traditional meridian lines.
Wow.
And practices like acupuncture and Qigong are understood as affecting this energy flow, and studies do show they influence the ANS and other physiological markers.
And yoga's concept of prana, how does that fit?
In yoga, prana is the life force. It's managed through breath control, pranayama, and it's said to flow through channels called nadis, centralized in energy centers called chakras. And again, modern studies demonstrate that specific breathing techniques improve heart rate variability, reduce stress hormones, enhance emotional regulation. These are measurable effects that align beautifully with the traditional concept of energetic cleansing or balancing prana.
What about Western traditions? Things like Reiki or energy healing?
These traditions also describe an energetic body or aura, often perceived as an electromagnetic field that's influenced by our emotions and thoughts. Now, while many people report feeling, you know, definite benefits from methods like Reiki, the sources are careful to note that these effects are very challenging to measure objectively using current classical scientific methods. They remain largely outside the realm of empirical proof at this time.
Okay. Circling back to therapeutic applications then, Integrale Orthopedi's findings seem pretty central to the source's argument here.
They are. They're presented as providing reproducible clinical evidence for a functional link between the ANS, the fascial system, and this extracorporeal field, this aura. The key insight from their work, according to the sources, is how addressing perceived energetic or emotional burdens through techniques like aura release leads to the resolution of physical dysfunctions. It supports the hypothesis that emotions, fascia, and the autonomic nervous system are linked by some kind of higher-level, subtle energetic system.
And orthobiognomy is mentioned as well, using similar techniques.
Yes, the sources note that orthobiognomy, which is a gentle osteopathy-based approach, has incorporated various specific aura techniques into its practice for decades, and thousands of therapists worldwide apparently use these methods. The sources also acknowledge, you know, that millions of people report feeling better after receiving treatments from a variety of what might be termed esoteric methods, Reiki, aura work, chakra balancing, and so on.
So there's widespread anecdotal evidence and these clinical observations from specific schools like Integrale Orthopedi, but there's still a boundary with broader classical scientific validation. Is that fair?
That's a crucial point the sources make, yes. Many aspects of these practices and the concept of the aura as a distinct, consistently measurable field, they still fall outside the current capabilities of classical scientific validation, meaning they aren't directly empirically reproducible in a standard laboratory setting yet. Even the role of biophotons, while measurable, is still an open question regarding their function communication versus just being a byproduct.
But the sources strongly advocate for taking an integrative view, right? Not just dismissing it all.
Absolutely. They argue that dismissing these concepts outright just because they don't yet fit neatly into our current scientific models might mean overlooking valuable insights. The practical benefits observed in stress management, emotional processing, supporting psychosomatic health, those seem significant. An integrative perspective, one that tries to bridge emerging scientific evidence for subtle biological processes with the wisdom accumulated over centuries in cultural traditions, offers a potentially richer way to understand the aura.
So, not purely mystical,
but possibly as the expression of subtle interconnected biological dynamics, dynamics mediating between our physical body, our environment, and our conscious and unconscious mind.
That definitely reframes the conversation.
Yeah.
It moves it away from a simple real versus not real binary towards exploring subtle biological processes versus mystical interpretation.
It encourages a more open-minded investigation.
Yeah. Let's delve into the more personal dimension the sources describe. There's a specific anecdote in there about discovering this aura load.
Yes, the author recounts this moment in a seminar where they were demonstrating the Integrale Orthopedi approach. They were working with a participant who had pelvic torsion, and the standard technique of touching the navel, which should release it, just wasn't working.
Okay.
And in that moment, their hand instinctively lifted slightly above the navel into the space just off the body. And that is what released the torsion.
Wow. That must have been a powerful moment of realization for them.
It was presented as the direct discovery of an aura load over that specific area, yes.
Yeah.
This experience really solidified for the author the idea that there is an overriding connection between this external field and the body, particularly areas holding stress or scars. It underscored their view that truly sustainable healing often requires addressing this aura load.
So it wasn't just theoretical for them, it became a tangible, felt phenomenon in their practice.
Exactly. And the sources really emphasize the felt experience as a key form of validation. They describe how bringing a hand too close to this perceived field, effectively compressing it, is consistently felt as unpleasant. It often triggers physical or emotional discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, holding an open hand at that boundary distance, facilitating the release, is felt as deeply relieving, both physically and psychologically, and often accompanied by the release of suppressed emotions. This is presented as strong evidence for a palpable, influential field surrounding us.
Based on their extensive experience, they mention over 15 years with thousands of patients and participants. What are the key takeaways they emphasize from these observations?
They highlight several main points. First, that most people, when guided, can actually feel the presence of this outer and inner aura load and the process of its release. It's palpable.
Okay.
Second, they report that the causal link between a perceived aura load, ANS dysfunction, and fascial blockages can always be reliably demonstrated using their pelvic torsion test as an indicator.
Right.
It's reproducible in their clinical setting. Third, they see the aura as having its own dynamic. It seems to absorb, store, and emit impressions, influencing our body, psyche, and even life circumstances.
And
fourth, they state that our bodies, particularly the fascia, seem to exchange information through our auras, meaning we unconsciously influence each other. We sense and sometimes take on others' emotions or states instinctively without relying solely on our standard five senses.
That points to a level of communication beyond what we usually consider, like way beyond words or body language.
It does. They describe this as the language of vibration.
The aura as a carrier for unconscious communication.
Yes, specifically highlighting communication between the fascial systems of different individuals. This language is described as international, grounded in direct experience rather than learned concepts. Our auras are constantly exchanging information unconsciously, sometimes taking on negative patterns, especially if there's a resonance, but also capable of engaging in mutual positive reinforcement.
Which makes sense of that feeling, doesn't it? Feeling drained after certain interactions or uplifted by others, even if nothing specific was said.
Precisely. And they go further, describing different layers of the aura, which they link to different levels of consciousness.
Layers of the aura. How do they define those? That sounds complex.
Well, first, they describe what they call transpersonal layers. These relate to qualities like harmony, peace, stillness, or love. These are felt not as personal emotions, but as independent, almost universal or divine qualities that become accessible when one consciously connects to them.
Like tapping into something bigger than the individual self.
Exactly. Then there are the personal layers. These are tied more to individual emotions and characteristics, things like humility, gratitude, but also envy or greed. These are felt as personal qualities, radiating outwards through the aura, and are linked to one's inner maturity and perhaps energy centers like the chakras.
And the unconscious layers sound particularly impactful based on what you said earlier.
They are described as crucially important, yes, because they exert a significant influence on our lives, often completely beneath our conscious awareness. This is seen as a more primal level, maybe shared with animals and plants. It influences how we perceive places and people, often more strongly determining our unconscious assessment of others, including attraction or repulsion, than our conscious thoughts do.
Mm-hmm.
And unresolved trauma and stress patterns get stored here, which reduces our fundamental resilience.
So if you find yourself with unexplained fatigue or mood swings or recurring health issues,
the sources suggest it's worth considering. Have you unconsciously picked up stress patterns from someone you've been near? Or are unresolved conflicts or trauma from your own unconscious past impacting you now? They state that the aura release technique can help bring these unconscious burdens into awareness, lessen their hold, and ultimately increase the aura's overall strength and resilience.
All right. And there's also a concept they mentioned of an inner aura.
Yes. They describe a subtle energetic field associated with each structure within the body, organs, bones, tissues. Each part has its own unique rhythm and melody, as they put it.
Huh.
They propose this inner field can be harmonized, perhaps with the navel serving as a kind of central access point. Accessing and harmonizing this inner field through conscious connection or skilled body work is seen as vital. Disharmonies here are considered a frequent, often overlooked cause of chronic, difficult-to-treat issues, while harmony contributes to balance and authenticity.
And conscious touch is important here. How does that work?
They state that conscious, focused touch directed towards these inner layers brings strength and vitality. It helps release unconscious burdens held deep within the body's tissues and can even facilitate connection to profound, almost soul levels. They share some powerful examples from their practice. Touching the energy field of the uterus is like accessing a temple, leading to a new level of femininity. Making mental contact with the bone marrow aura can be profoundly shaking and healing, referencing that phrase, shaken to the core.
Wow. And then there's the layer most people think of, the outer aura.
Right. This is the field most people think of when they hear the word aura. It's apparently felt by many, though seen by few. Different traditions describe various layers and chakras within this outer field. The key point from the sources here is that seminar participants consistently feel the exact size of what they call a stress cloud in this outer aura.
The stress cloud?
Yeah, it's the distance from the body where an approaching hand starts to feel like a pressure or a burden. And they state this stress cloud reliably dissolves when the open hand release technique is applied. So it directly links stress and trauma, this external field, the physical body, and one's life experience.
And finally, they touch on a beyond level.
This gets into more speculative territory, ideas that might extend beyond our typical understanding of space and time. They mention phenomena like sensing simultaneous thoughts between people or the observation of dying people sometimes radiating this profound sense of peace. Feeling the presence or even the aura of deceased people in certain places is suggested as a hint of levels of being that might exist independently of the physical body after death. There's even this intriguing, rather poignant idea they raise. Could the inner aura of removed organs, like a uterus after a hysterectomy, somehow survive physical death and continue to hold unresolved grief, needing to be energetically seen or touched for healing to occur, even on that subtle level?
These concepts definitely push the boundaries of conventional thinking. So, okay, for someone listening who's intrigued by this, how does one actually put this aura release into practice? What are the steps described in the sources?
The sources do provide descriptions of specific exercises. Mm-hmm. They're aimed at releasing this perceived stress cloud around the body.
Can you walk us through the basic exercise? How would someone try this?
Sure. The core technique involves standing or sitting comfortably. You spread your arms wide out to your sides. You could try this at navel height first and then maybe repeat it neck-deck height. Then you slowly bring your hands just a little bit closer towards your body. And you need to pay close attention to the space between your hands and your body. You're sensing for a subtle feeling. It might be density or pressure or just like a burden in that space.
And once you feel that sensation, what then?
Once you identify the distance where you first feel that density, you stop moving your hands. You hold your open palms there, facing inwards towards your body for about 1 to 2 minutes. The idea is that this open posture, held right at the boundary, allows the energy of the stress cloud and any associated suppressed emotions to slowly dissipate or release.
Is it recommended to do this alone or with someone?
The sources do suggest having a partner or therapist present, especially when you're first trying it out. They report that sometimes stronger emotional reactions can occur as things are released, so having support might be helpful.
Right. What if you try this and you don't feel anything? No density, no burden, nothing.
That's noted as a possibility, yeah. It could mean that your personal stress cloud or field is actually larger than your arms can reach when spread wide. For these larger fields, there's a technique described, ideally done with a partner, though you could adapt it visually. With a partner, they would approach you slowly with a flat hand extended, coming from a distance. You would indicate the exact distance where you first start sensing their hand's energy or influence just before it feels unpleasant or that pressure.
Okay.
At that specific boundary distance, the partner either stops and slightly turns their hand away, or doing it alone, you visually imagine your own open arms extended out to that greater distance and just hold that image and intention for 1 to 2 minutes.
Interesting. Are there other ways to apply this principle, like on specific body parts?
Yes. The sources mention using 1 or 2 hands to apply the aura release or stress release principle over specific areas. Things like energy centers, chakras, scars, or organs that feel particularly burdened. They even mention the eyes. The inner aura release is described a bit differently. Placing your hand on the body and then focusing your perception into the depth of the structure or organ, consciously engaging with its subtle field.
And is this something you do just once, or is it meant to be a regular practice?
Daily practice is recommended. The sources suggest following an aura release session with specific navel neck integration, and if needed, navel scar integration exercises. Repeating these daily helps to anchor the release, they say. But beyond specific exercises, they really encourage consciously engaging with everyday life, paying attention to your body, to others, to your environment, actively filling your own aura, so to speak, with your consciousness and awareness.
Finally, there's a compelling parallel drawn between the aura release posture and something. Well, something universal in human culture.
Yes, they point out that the open-armed position used in the aura release exercise, arms spread wide, maybe slightly cupped or reaching forward, is a posture that's universally recognized across cultures, across history.
You mean the posture of prayer or supplication?
Exactly. That posture in prayer is so often associated with asking for burdens to be lifted, seeking relief, connecting to something greater than oneself. And people frequently report feelings of relief or connection afterwards. The sources give the example of the phrase Allah Akbar, God is greater, in Islam, often used spontaneously when encountering the vastness or wonders of life, signifying a connection to something immense.
Bringing it right back to that idea of connecting to something larger than ourselves.
They suggest that this posture, whether used consciously in prayer or perhaps unconsciously tapped into during something like aura release, seems to touch something profound about seeking relief, connection, and maybe aligning oneself with a greater energetic reality.
So looking back at our deep dive today, we started with the traditional concept of the aura, often seen as purely mystical, maybe even dismissed. We've explored how research in fields like neurobiology, fascia, bioelectromagnetism, photon emissions, how it's revealing subtle, interconnected biological processes that might offer a scientific lens on aspects of this traditional idea.
And the clinical observations, particularly from approaches like integrale orthopedy, as presented in the sources, offer these apparently reproducible findings. Findings linking perceived aural loads to measurable signs of ANS stress and physical symptoms, and also profoundly influencing emotional states.
The sources make a really compelling argument, I think, for the value of an integrative view, one that doesn't just dismiss cultural wisdom, but actively seeks to find points of connection and potential explanation through emerging scientific understanding.
It encourages us all, really, to consider the possibility that the aura might not be a purely mystical phenomenon after all, but potentially the expression of these subtle biological processes, processes that mediate between our physical body, the environment around us, and the inner landscape of our mind and emotions.
And this leaves us with a powerful, perhaps provocative thought for you, the listener, drawn directly from the sources we explored today. They suggest that our life is potentially far greater than we currently imagine it, experience it, or perhaps even allow ourselves to live it. How might tuning into these subtle layers, including exploring the idea of your own aura, whether you approach it from a scientific angle, a spiritual one, or simply from a felt experience perspective, how might that open up a deeper understanding of yourself and of your intricate connections to the world and the people around you?